What's up, you guys? Sean Ross at FightfulSelect.com. This is the Backstage Report podcast. So I like to explain this show a little bit ahead of me getting started, because every week it seems like we have a pretty big influx of subscribers. So I wanted to give you a little bit of a rundown. We break a lot of news here at Fightful Select, so this show covers that. It covers whether it's breaking news, one of our exclusive interviews, maybe a note, and I can add a little bit more color or my opinion to it as well. I should specify, just because something is my opinion does not mean it's news. Please do not take it as such. If I say that I think something will happen, that does not mean it's going to happen. I had somebody last week say that I said there was going to be a bidding war for a wrestler. I did not say anything of that kind. That's getting a little bit harder to kind of differentiate in that regard, but I'll do my best to keep it as clear as possible for you guys. But there's a lot of stuff to get into. There's so much news to get into. We cover contract updates, injury updates, stats as well. But the big story is Tessa Blanchard. Impact Wrestling terminated Tessa Blanchard's contract, but I was able to find out that it was coming due anyway. They canned it on June 26, I believe it was. Now, if you guys have paid attention to Fightful Select of late, you probably heard me say that I would be surprised to see her appear at Slammiversary in that five-way match. Well, the thing that I had heard was that they asked Tessa to film promos. She asked for a day rate, even though she was still under contract, and the two could not come to terms to make that happen. The release had nothing to do with the controversies in January. In fact, they wanted to keep her, from what I understand. But she has not appeared on the Impact taping since the COVID pandemic started, as she's been stuck in Mexico. They weren't that sure she would be able to make it there, but they had to get their world title on the show. They've had Moose defending a TNA championship during that period. We'll talk more about the other missing ingredient that now makes that five-way a three-way. But I have heard that there is other interest besides Impact Wrestling in Tessa Blanchard. But we were not specified as to what companies are interested. The wrestlers that I spoke to in Impact Wrestling, they seem to think it's AAA and WWE. However, that's just conjecture. I don't know that any of them have spoken to Tessa Blanchard about this. Now, I was told by those same wrestlers that they did not think that AEW would try to bring her in, even though they have her father on the roster. And almost everybody that I spoke to on the Impact roster did not expect her to be at Slammiversary. There was some miscommunication in there somewhere, as a lot of people thought that her deal was up in July. As it turns out, the contract was set to expire on June 30th, and that comes directly from her side. Now, there's a lot of people that ask, well, is there a non-compete? Is there a non-compete? No. Non-competes don't work that way. They cannot extend her and make her unable to work somewhere out past her contract expiration date. That doesn't work like that. She would have had to have agreed to a non-compete extension, so to speak, meaning that she would have had to have agreed to let them just pay her to not wrestle anywhere, even beyond her contract. So unless that happened, she doesn't have a non-compete, and she'll be free to go anywhere immediately, and would have been on June 30th, July 1st. This is a complete mess. This is a tumultuous situation. There were people high up in Impact that really didn't have any idea what was going on or how it was going to work out, but they did want her to send in promos, and she didn't do it. And the relationship was never getting better after that. Now, I'll add my opinion to this situation. I think that Tessa Blanchard is one of the most talented competitors, performers in the world, period. I think that the way that she carries herself is rivaled on the women's side only by a few people. Only by a few people. In the ring, she's also very good. I would not say that she's better than Asuka or Sasha. I'd say that she's up there with Charlotte Flair as it pertains to in-ring talent. But the thing is, and it's a thing that is really underrated in the wrestling world, when you see her in the ring, she always looks like she's trying to win the match that she's in. She always looks like she's trying to be victorious. And that's because she carries herself like a winner on the screen. There are so many other issues with Tessa Blanchard. There are a lot of attitude issues. There's a lot of controversies over the language that she's used in the past or allegedly used that are going to keep her out of a lot of places. If those attitude issues and those controversies did not exist, she would have offers from every single company in the world. She works hard. I mean, I think she did, over the course of the last year that she had wrestled, she did like 90 dates, I believe it was. So she's worked a lot of stuff, or maybe it was like 80 dates, but she did like 90 matches or something, because some of those WOW tapings are one date, but she worked 5 matches in one day sometimes. She was made the face of WOW, and then WOW ended up biting the dust. There was a lot of issues with people in WOW. There was a lot of issues there. I hadn't heard of a ton in Impact Wrestling. I always heard that she had a good relationship with a lot of the higher-ups there, but I don't know how well that extended. WWE did not look upon her favorably after her Mae Young Classic situation. There were rumors that she had leaked the results. I don't know if that's true or not. There were rumors of an incident at the Performance Center, which she denied vehemently to me personally. There have been a lot of issues. Can she clean it up? Well, she's 24 years old. If I were WWE and I signed her, I would say the first thing you got to do is go out and apologize. You have to apologize. And you better mean it. If I were WWE, that's what I'd be saying. Tessa Blanchard has the ability to be a WrestleMania main eventer. And I fully believe that. However, she's got some apologizing and growing up to do. And she's 24 years old. Nobody is above growth. Nobody is above learning. But to bring somebody into your locker room that has ongoing problems, probably not such a hot idea. Speaking of Impact Wrestling, Michael Elgin, Sammy Callahan got into a fight. Now, it was hard to really put into words about this fight, but I don't know that this had anything to do with his release. Elgin had some allegations about him, but they got into a fight, and I was told that they were setting up a match that involved Ken Shamrock. It was the triple threat match they were a part of, and Sammy wanted to start the match with a dive. Elgin didn't. It got really heated, and they came to blows. Talent ended up breaking it up, and Scott D'Amore stepped in, and then this week, or last week rather, Impact released a statement saying Elgin would no longer appear on their programming. He was involved in the planned Slammiversary main event, a Team Canada tease. There were a lot of plans around him. And there were a lot of people surprised that he was brought in. I would not expect to see him back in New Japan, at least right now. There are some people of influence there that were not too thrilled with the way that that things ended. But there are some in Impact that think he'll find his way back as an agent or a producer or something like that, but that was just one talent telling me that, and they didn't seem that plugged into that situation. But Elgin and Callahan got into a fight. If you're going to ask me who won, I do not know the answer to that. No clue. But that's 40% of the planned Slammiversary main event right out the window. Right out the window. Dave Crist. A lot of allegations emerged about him, which led to PW Insider reporting that Chris was finished with Impact Wrestling and had actually been kicked out of the locker room. So when I asked around, I learned from several wrestlers that it stemmed from the Rich Swann injury sustained earlier this year that has him sidelined to this day. Chris was said to have been booted from the locker room after never apologizing or checking in with Rich Swann after it happened. He had a lot of heat, so Impact Wrestling is going to see some roster turnover here, and I'm not saying it was a blessing in disguise. What happened was not a blessing in disguise. The allegations associated are shitty and horrible, but they're getting some roster turnover here. They've got a lot of salary freed up, so to speak. Joey Ryan hit the bricks. Michael Elgin hit the bricks. Dave Crist, Tessa Blanchard, all gone. And I'll have a report today. They're looking into some things. They're looking into some things there. Now, this isn't in the weekly, but I did post a tweet saying that I heard WWE was serious about kind of clearing things up or clearing out their roster of problematic people. Velveteen Dream was one of those people that WWE was looking into. And he was in a car accident last Friday, which is what my tweet was about, saying that I had heard some other not so great things, not involving the allegations. He was in a car accident. WWE confirmed that to me. He was released from the hospital, but the word among people backstage was that Velveteen Dream was either on the chopping block or was very close to it. WWE is apparently getting very sick of dealing with a lot of Velveteen Dream related things. Oh, SmackDown rewrites. So SmackDown did undergo significant rewrites for the show. We don't know how or who were affected, just that the issues of COVID-19 changed the show significantly. Their COVID situation's a mess. Upon news of positive tests on Thursday, several members of the roster contacted Fightful, with one of them even asking how many positive tests were rumored, because we would know better than them. That's not promising when the roster doesn't even know. The wrestlers were not informed of an approximate number of tests or positives or who tested positive. And this is a far cry from the first positive test 3 months ago, which WWE provided the name, how it was likely contracted, and gave an update on that individual via an internal memo. Now, main roster talent we've heard of are generally upset about the handling, with one saying that they'd also prefer if WWE had set up post-taping tests, and another was particularly concerned for Kayla Braxton, considering the virus had reemerged in her. There were several NXT wrestlers that needed to be retested after being exposed to somebody positive, but they tested negative. There were also concerns and worries over a couple of small gatherings that took place among wrestlers, considering the rumored numbers were so high. Now, we're told that it's across all kinds of departments, and despite last week's news, there were some people at the PC who were not required to come in for testing until this week. NXT PC talent were sent a message Thursday morning after 9 a.m. saying, "Per Vince, all talent are needed for TV Friday and Saturday. Please go to the PC by 10:30 a.m. today for drive-through COVID testing. If you took a test yesterday, you do not need to today. If you're in a high-level storyline, you will be off camera. Thanks. Important, after the test, you need to remain isolated and quarantined until after the tapings." Many talent missed that deadline and were awaiting a new location as of 5 p.m. Eastern. There were several NXT and PC talent that were going to skip last week's tapings after the second COVID test, that then accelerated by the other tests. However, they were urged to come in even after expressing they weren't comfortable in doing so. As mentioned, friends and family will not be permitted at the tapings, and they were told it's possible that they would be able to in the future. AEW note, Ricky Starks caught a stray punch and ended up getting his eye swollen, according to Jeremy Lambert. And one of his old buddies, Zicky Dice, asked for his release from the NWA. It is not official yet, but it's been granted. NWA had sent an email out to talent stating they didn't want any talent with the company, that didn't believe in the vision moving forward. So far, we're told that the contract releases do not include any specific instructions outside of a non-disparagement clause. The company has no plans thus far as to whether or not they'll run any events or any content in the wake of sexual assault allegations against NWA VP Dave Lagana. Recently, NWA lost another former TV champion in Starks, who came out smelling like roses when he appeared for AEW. He was offered a contract on the spot, and the match ended up after his match and ended up with the company. And Zicky noted in our interview that he and Starks remain friends and continue to produce content together. From what I understand, Zicky's angling to get into AEW or NXT. When I reached out to him on the matter, and he just said outlandish, which is kind of his thing. So there you go there. We also have info on Bobby Roode. Robert Roode was announced as being traded from SmackDown to Raw along with Dolph Ziggler for AJ Styles. Not that it's much of a surprise at this point, but the reason he hasn't been on TV since Elimination Chamber is that he is stuck in Canada and hasn't been able to get back into the country. As of now, there is no word on when he's going to return. Making a finisher return, Arn Anderson's. This is one of my favorite to do. He went from the Gourd Buster to the Spine Buster and said that he came up with the move on the fly as he had someone in a bear hug, and he wondered to himself how it would look with a slam, and ended up innovating the move accordingly. He also said that he outright took the DDT from Jake Roberts because he wanted a move that didn't require him to lift his opponent up. And Triple H went to the trouble of actually asking Arn Anderson if he could use that version of the move. But he also, Arn also put over Rhino, Carl Anderson, Bobby Roode, as all having different spine busters, and broke down their different versions and said that he considers his to be unique from the rest. Unique from the rest definitely explains Kevin Thorne, also known as Mordecai. This interview is one that I did last October, late October, I believe it was, in Indianapolis at his home. The file got corrupted, and I was able to save it, and I'm finally running it. I was able to save that one in an Ivelisse interview that isn't nearly as long, but I'm so excited about this. He covers a lot. There are a lot of Vince McMahon stories here. He says that he got a call up to the main roster with Tomko, but Vince McMahon told him he didn't want tag team wrestlers, so to come up with something else. He pitched Mordecai, which was inspired by Malachi from Children of the Corn, and Vince McMahon loved it. He was originally set for a program with The Undertaker, but it had it taken away from him when he became Kevin Thorne because he had to go get his labrum fixed. When he got ready, he got yelled at for looking too much like The Undertaker and said Vince McMahon was not happy about it. So he cut his hair to look less like The Undertaker, and then he got yelled at for that too. He remembered working closely with Dusty Rhodes to prepare for the feud and film vignettes. Now, this is the year where Shawn Michaels first faced Undertaker at WrestleMania. But the idea moved from Kevin Thorne to Hayde Vanson, and he was given a lot of the vignettes they worked on. Thorne was upset about this. He talked to Freddie Prinze Jr. and Undertaker, and he ended up quitting the company after those vignettes were given to Hayde Vanson. They pitched Thorne being Hayde Vanson's heavy, and he said he didn't want to do it. And he did say that he regretted making a stubborn decision. And WWE offered him a new contract, but he rejected it. He was originally supposed to feud with Undertaker in 04-05 under the Mordecai character, but a bar fight that he was in came back to haunt him, and he and WWE ended up getting sued, and he was taken off TV. This is I'm very proud of this interview. It is an awesome interview with a really good guy who was very candid about his career before WWE, the Mordecai character, how it went, how it didn't go, leaving WWE. He said that he could not cut it on the indie circuit, and he talks about Kevin Thorne coming back, him leaving. This is a really good interview. I feel like I say that every new interview I drop is one of my favorites, but I'm enjoying doing these 30, 40-minute interviews so much, and I'm glad you all are taking well to them. Well, fans did not take well to WWE planning for shows with real fans. WWE has been planning for weeks to make moves outside the Performance Center in Full Sail. They told me this information was not accurate, but I have had this. Dave Meltzer has put it out there. Andrew Zarian has heard about it. I conferred with Andrew Zarian about this. Andrew was one of the primary guys that I heard this from and was able to follow up. But we were told that WWE was hoping around Extreme Rules or after it to run Lakeland at the RP Funding Center. ROH has been there several times, but a few members of the roster had heard of these plans when we inquired about them. The plans that we had heard of called for that weekend taping in late July, but as has been the case with WWE, things change and delays happen, and this was before the COVID outbreak, so to speak. So I do not know that they are still doing this, but it was in the plans. It was definitely in the plans. Lots of contract updates. The Speaking Out movement has led to several NXT and NXT UK releases. Jack Gallagher, Liguero, Travis Banks all let go after sexual abuse allegations were levied against them. The same thing in Impact Wrestling. Dave Crist, Joey Ryan are no longer with the company. Michael Elgin is not being used. And as we mentioned at the top of the show, Tessa Blanchard was released from her contract that was already set to expire. Dave Lagana resigned as VP from NWA. That set a domino effect that has led to Zicky Dice being granted his NWA release. Ricky Starks has signed with AEW, as we mentioned. He was offered a contract on the spot after a good showing against Cody. And Calvin Tankman has signed with MLW. Definitely an emerging prospect in Calvin Tankman with a unique look. He is one to watch out for. Fightful injury report. Kairi Sane has not wrestled since sustaining a cut in a match over a month ago. Riddick Moss has not wrestled since March 9th. Singh Brothers have not wrestled since February 2020. A lot of these are just inactives, so to speak. Robert Roode has not wrestled since March 8th. Sami Zayn sitting out during the pandemic, as is Kevin Owens. Ali has been off TV since February. Lars Sullivan's initial return date was late June 2020. That has come and gone, and he still is not back. Vanessa Bourne over in NXT has not wrestled since January 31st. Kyle O'Reilly was pulled from April NXT shows, but did appear on the show the last couple of weeks in vignettes. Mansoor has not wrestled since March 1. You have Matt Jackson working through his bruised rib. Jimmy Havoc has been announced as undergoing rehab after sexual abuse allegations. Phoenix returned to the company, and he will be wrestling, I believe, on this week or next week's show. So he's returned after being sidelined due to an injury ahead of Double or Nothing. Sammy Guevara has been suspended due to inappropriate comments resurfacing. He is going to undergo at least a month of sensitivity training. His salary is being donated, and he is out of action as of right now as well. Tessa Blanchard stuck in Mexico during the pandemic. Elgin suspended pending behavioral review, and Impact will not be using him as a result. Rich Swann, who's been out of action since January 10th, he had surgery a couple weeks later. He was on the show this past week, but did not wrestle, obviously. Some stats for the week ending. Now, we have these early for Fightful Select Tier 2 subscribers, but they usually drop every Sunday on Fightful.com. Took WWE 34 minutes before they started a match on Raw last week. Monday actually wasn't the first time Asuka has beaten Charlotte. She beat her via DQ in December 2018 and also won in November 2019. Charlotte and Asuka have now beaten each other three consecutive years each. Their match was the fourth televised one-on-one match between the two this year. Robert Stone is now scheduled for his first WWE match since a 2006 SmackDown loss to Mark Henry, and it'll be the first match he's had in 16 months. Matt Hardy has won his last five matches in AEW and is 2-0 in singles matches. It took only 12 seconds for Hikaru Shida to defeat Red Velvet last Wednesday. Joey Janela and Sonny Kiss lost for the first time as a team last week, after going 4-0. Lince Dorado and Grand Metalik won only their second match on Raw or SmackDown since September. FTR are now 2-0 and have won two matches in a row for the first time since December. Their 2-0 record pertaining only to AEW, obviously. Nikki Cross picked up her first singles televised win since November. And Colt Cabana got his first win on Dynamite last week since his debut match. And since December, he's wrestled on TV for NWA, New Japan, Ring of Honor, and All Elite Wrestling. Very impressive, and we hope that this show impressed you. Tell the world about it. It really helps. Any positive tweets or posts on Facebook especially. We could definitely use some help on the Facebook word of mouth end of things. Thank you, guys. Until next time, we're out.